Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change and how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community. This program is an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. It's made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellard Sargent. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker, and every other week we have conversations with individuals. I have conversations with individuals in our communities who are provocative, creative, smart, collaborative, and problem solvers and humanitarians. Today is another one of those shows. Many on the Central Coast will be enjoying the warmth of the holidays over the next few weeks with family and friends, while those who are homeless may be caught out in the cold this coming winter. Although a 2017 Homeless Point in Time census report showed the number of homeless people in San Luis Obispo County has plunged since 2013 by 49%, homelessness is a very real concern for many areas, especially in North County, where services are seriously lacking. Over the past 5 years, San Luis Obispo County and its provider partners have made significant investments and reforms to meet the needs of people experiencing homelessness, moving many people off the streets and into housing. Yet, the report showed that 69% of homeless individuals remained unsheltered. Today, we'll be discussing who makes up this population and what no more needs to be done. My guests today are Orlando Gallegos, President, Board of Directors, and Executive Director with Transitional Food and Shelter, Inc., Sergeant Jeff Wilshusen, Atascadero Police Department, 20-year veteran, and Secretary and member of the Board of Directors, also with Transitional Food and Shelter, Inc. You are invited to participate in our conversation today and can call in and be a part of the discussion. And to do that, the phone number is 805-781-3875. We'd love to have you join us. And welcome, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having us.
I am, I'm curious always when people come to talk about the agencies that they're involved with and the work that they do, how they got involved in that. So I'm curious about you. So Orlando, I'll start with you. What is it that got you involved in this work?
Well, this specific work is sort of a big change for me. First of all, I'm from Silicon Valley. I've been here a little over 16 years. And a couple of years ago, there was a need to find a new facility for a new warming center, and I brokered with St. William's Parish in Atascadero, the use of their hall for the then Atascadero Warming Center. A year ago, after sort of an organizational catastrophe, we looked around at advisors that were available to take over the organization. I happened to be the only one, and so I did. But my Silicon Valley experience paid off. What I could see was a need to change and put in a new organizational model. Thank goodness it only took us a couple of weeks to get it up and running and starting to be effective. And since then, we actually ended up with a very, very successful year.
Oh, my goodness. So had you done any work with homeless?
No, I hadn't. I'd always been involved with high school and youth, had been a member of the Board of Directors of the Youth Division of Catholic Charities in Santa Clara County. It's a large organization.
Yeah.
And had also initiated a mentoring program for high-performance Latino youth in the Bay Area. So this was an entirely new experience.
This was kind of out of your wheelhouse, but you brought a skill set that was really needed. Yeah, that's fantastic. And Sergeant Jeff.
Yes.
For you, how did you get involved?
Well, I think it really started a couple of years ago. Just working the streets for so long, you have a lot of run-ins with the homeless people. And I noticed things really weren't changing. And so I started attending a few meetings with the North County Homeless Coalition, where I really got to know a lot of the North County resources. And from there, it kind of led me down a path to where I met Orlando about a year and a half ago. And I started collaborating with him, and I got involved in the Warming Center last year and was able to spend quite a many, many mornings there greeting our guests that stayed there and getting a chance to talk to them. And then when the opportunity came along to be a part of Transitional Food and Shelter, I jumped on it, and which is a fabulous organization that serves another form of homelessness in the North County. And so we're just, it's been very fulfilling for me to see the transition from, you know, my day job of just mainly doing enforcement to where I'm really hands-on now can make a difference in homelessness.
And your 20 years experience with, was that here in this community?
Yeah, I've been, I've worked for the city of Atascadero now for 20 years.
Wow, okay. So you've seen a big transition over that 20 years.
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
But luckily, I'm able to get time off and do my volunteer work through this organization.
That's fantastic. So let's talk a little bit about the Transitional Food and Shelter. You mentioned it's a different kind of organization. Can you guys share a little bit about what kind of organization it is and what it does?
We actually have two programs in the organization.
Okay.
The a smaller program we call Medically Fragile Homelessness. Mm-hmm. And these are individuals typically that will be released from a hospital. They are mending, trying to get well. But fundamentally, they often have no resources, no place to go, and really at that point can't take care of themselves. So this is a very small population, but parallels the Atascadero Warming Center, which is our second program. This small population, we fundamentally help them heal to the point to where they can take that next step in life. Of course, some of them don't heal and ultimately do pass.
Mm-hmm.
On the Warming Center side, we deal with the largest homeless population. About 80% of homeless would fall into this most vulnerable of the homeless. They include men, women, and families mm-hmm. that fundamentally have just lost a big step in their life and don't have the personal resources or the financial resources to get back on track. We seek them out and provide them basically a warm, dry, and safe place, always showing them respect, compassion, and love. We found that those last three, compassion, respect, and love, are key to building confidence, creating friendships, and from that does come forward progress. In our opinion, that's the key to getting these individuals, or many of them, back into the mainstream where they can care for themselves.
Are the homeless population, the homeless population that you're dealing with through these services, are they residents of Atascadero? Are they a transient population to Atascadero? Is it a mix of that?
A good portion of them are people that were born and raised in Atascadero yeah. or that have been there 5, 10, 15 years. We definitely do see a transient population that comes through town
mm-hmm.
To say that, you know, we have no outside homeless people in sure. Atascadero would be ignorant to say, because we do have some that either one, they were passing through town and their car broke down and they
right.
got stuck in there. And, you know, next thing you know, it's been a year, 2 years, 3 years.
Yeah.
They've been stuck in town. Or someone that's moved to Atascadero from another place and they're experiencing homelessness. So we do have a mix, but the larger population of it is people that are from Atascadero or have been there for a significant amount of time.
Talk a little bit about the kinds of cases that you've seen that end up being homeless, because there's a lot of misunderstanding, I think, and a misperception about who is at risk and actually falls into a homeless population.
I think we all have friends who have had changes in life
yeah.
and sort of gotten off track. Maybe they did not end up homeless, but I can give you a number of examples
that
are really interesting. For example, we had a gentleman with us this past year. He came out of Silicon Valley. We might have in a given evening 25, 35 to 55 individuals, men, women, and at times families with a number of children. But this one individual was particularly interesting because we have a congregation area before we physically open the center. And chatting with this individual, I began to realize that he knew an awful lot about electronics.
Hmm.
Well, I happen to be involved with Apple Computer in its inception. And soon it became very apparent that this individual was one of the key design engineers that designed the Lisa computer, which was Apple's first big introduction. What's amazing is that I also knew that every one of those individuals walked out of Apple Computer were probably $8 to $10 million worth of stock. And here he was, homeless, with all the signs that you might expect. And in talking with him, he just shared a number of things that happened to him in life that drove him downward.
Mm-hmm.
He was still very bright and with, in my opinion, the right kind of support. He stood a good chance of coming back, and certainly with his skill set, one day would have been very employable. As it turned out, this past year, a week after we closed the warming center, he actually fell and died. We don't know the reason why, and it happened many blocks from our shelter, but it's one of those occasions where, again, an individual with such a future when he was young had circumstances change his life.
Yeah.
And ultimately did not make it.
Yeah.
Those parallels are actually very similar to what happens to nearly all of the homeless. Something changes in their life. And with a homeless person, you'll tend to find that if they're homeless on the streets for a year and a half, 2 years, 3 years, they change decidedly. Their loss of hope, their loss of expectation is so absent, and that's what we try to rekindle.
How do you do that? I mean, how does the shelter support that, Jeff? What is the shelter, the warming shelter, and this organization? How does it engage in a way that can mitigate some of that?
Well, first off, I think we have a very inviting center. It's based upon, as Orlando said, you know, love is a key factor when people come into our shelter.
Yeah.
Everyone's accepted without prejudice or judgment.
Mm-hmm.
We welcome them in. We give them a warm meal, and it gives them a chance to really put down their guard. You know, when they're living on the street, you have to be on guard 24/7.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Because you never know who's around the corner, who's going to take your property, who's going to assault you. So bringing them into the shelter gives them a warm, dry place to stay, sleep for the night. And a warm meal really gives them a chance to relax. It's an amazing transformation that we see. Right now, we've been open a few days, and our guests, you can still see they're coming in. Mm-hmm. They're cordial, but their guard's still up. As we continue to be open, you're going to slowly see their guard coming down, and confidence is slowly restored in them. So when they show up at the center, it's casual conversations, and it really gives us the opportunity to have these great conversations and hear the stories that these people have. Every homeless person has a story, and if you take the time and listen to that, you know, it's very meaningful, and you can find out, you know, how they're experiencing this homelessness. You know, the key point is, you know, some people will look at homelessness and they'll say, you know, what's wrong with them? Well, no, it's not what's wrong with
them.
How
did they mess up to get here?
No, but what happened to them? Yeah. Something in their life, as Orlando said, changed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's causing this homelessness. And it's a slippery slope that I think a lot of people have experienced, that when one bad thing happens, you know, the next thing happens. The next thing you know, you're spiraling down. And we really open our center and bring these people in to stop that spiral, to give them, you know, instill confidence back in their lives. We were talking last week, and someone brought up the fact, you know, it's amazing what somebody can do with a, you know, a good night's sleep and a warm meal.
Yeah.
You wake up in the morning and you feel confident. You're ready to handle the day. Can you imagine not having that warm place to stay? You're sleeping on under a bridge. You wake up and you're in the same spot, and you have no motivation to really change things.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. This is Chris Kington Barker, and you're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX HD1 San Luis Obispo, CanBX HD1 San Ardo, and KSBX Santa Barbara. Our topic for today is how we're addressing homelessness in the North County of San Luis Obispo County. My guests today are Orlando Gallegos, President, Board of Directors, and Executive Director with Transitional Food and Shelter, Inc., and Sergeant Jeff Wilshusen, from the Atascadero Police Department, a 20-year veteran, and he's also the secretary and member of the Board of Directors with Transitional Food and Shelter, Inc. You, too, can be a part of our conversation today. If you have questions or comments, please call in, and you can do that by dialing 805-781-3875. Again, that's 805-781-3875. And when you're talking about the people who are being served now, where is the warming shelter right now? Because there were some issues about where the warming shelter was going to be up in Atascadero, wasn't it? And
used the parish hall at St. William's Catholic Church in Atascadero, and we're continuing to do so.
Okay.
During this year, we will transition to another facility. The programs at St. William's continue to grow, and as a consequence, we're fluctuating our start time from typically 7 p.m. It will maybe as late as 9:30 at times to accommodate programs that involve various parts of the parish.
And how many people are you serving on average in an evening?
Well, last year our average was 37. Our peak was 59.
Oh, wow.
It starts slowly.
Yeah.
We've been open three or four nights. I think our peak now was 19 last night. It will fluctuate, and over the next month or two, it will grow and grow fairly decidedly.
And who are the volunteers that are helping with this?
They're primarily from various churches in the community. We run two shifts, a first shift from 7 till 1 a.m., and then a second shift from 1 till 7 in the morning when we close the center. Individuals from all walks of life who want to give up their time. We have two volunteers per shift, and then we have two resident managers that assist the volunteers and just assure that everything runs smoothly. Since we literally set up every night in a facility that's being used during the day.
So you have to break everything down
everything.
And put it away.
And we do that early in the morning.
Yeah.
At the same time, we serve dinner. There's a hot dinner already waiting on a table as they're coming in the door and getting signed in. There's a good breakfast, actually, served as they wake. And as they walk out the door, they typically get a sack lunch put in their backpack, so they get three squares during the day. And that is a big, big change.
Yeah.
Warming centers traditionally have provided snack-type food, a cold breakfast, and that was about it.
Yeah.
As Jeff said earlier, just a little bit of food goes a long way to building that sense of trust and welcome.
Yeah, and do some of the children that are at the warming center also engage in school? Are they attending school locally?
Yes, they do. Typically, well, first of all, we do not allow minors in without their parents.
Okay.
However, for example, last year we had two families of five, three children, different ages. We had, coincidentally, a special situation with high schoolers that were sort of in that marginal...
Emancipation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And as it turned out, I'll describe one of them. She had lost the last member of her family.
Mm.
She had lost her mother, her grandmother, and just her aunt. She had no place to go. One of our volunteers is a former school administrator, knew her. And as a consequence, we became very protective. We allowed her to participate as an adult. And yet, every morning, we would take her to school, deposit her with the assistant principal at Atascadero High School. Things work through a variety of circumstances and challenges during the year, but she'll graduate this year and probably attend college.
Oh, my goodness. That's fantastic. What a story. Yeah.
You know, I want to talk about one of the great things we have at our warming center, which we implemented last year, is we found if we give our residents a little bit of responsibility, it really improved their self-worth. We were able to allow some of them to come in 10, 15 minutes early, and we actually gave them jobs. Mm-hmm. We gave them special lanyards that said volunteer on them, and they helped us set up the warming center. And it really went a long way with building that trust and the confidence in them. You know, just being able to come into the center 15 minutes early, being that special person and helping set up, and in the morning, again, helping tear down, really does went a long way with the residents. And you saw the other residents seeing that, hey, they get to come early. They're, you know, how would you say, model guests.
Right,
A lot of them started to strive to be that person.
Part of the team.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that's. I can only imagine that would have a whole lot of value, self worth.
And that's It's, you know, they want a chance. You know, everybody wants a chance to give back a little bit.
Yeah.
And we were able to implement that program in our warming center, and I think it was very beneficial.
How are you integrating with some of the other services in the community for these individuals? For instance, in terms of seeking other more permanent housing or jobs or some of the other ways of getting out of some of their circumstances?
Well, I think that, first of all, we do interface with a number of agencies. Mm-hmm. However, because of the population we're dealing with, and I mean this sincerely, it is the 80% of the most vulnerable.
Yeah.
So our expectations are not
they're pretty low
that a large percent of them are going to go out immediately and find a job.
Mm-hmm.
We do have some real success stories in that,
yeah,
but they're limited because we're working with individuals that need a longer-term facility that will work with them,
mm-hmm.
and that's our long-term expectation is to provide that. We really believe that we need a 24/7 facility, where today we have a 12-hour facility.
Right.
So we're taking care of basic needs. We recognize the individual. We build trust. And as I say, we do have those success stories. But the largest number of the population, while we help them, I think that we essentially limit their progress because we do close.
Yeah.
As soon as inclement weather is over, we do bring the facility to a close. And again, our expectation is to build a long-term year-round facility. And the North County badly, badly needs that type of facility.
And there is no long-term facility or
no, there is not. I should comment. ECHO has a different model. They deal with that top 20%, and believe me, they do an excellent job in helping people find jobs, mm-hmm. and particularly to find housing or the combination of the two. We are operating in a different orbit where it's sustenance, both physical sustenance in terms of clothing, food, all of which is donated, by the way, and an opportunity to take a step forward, but it's limited. We do provide a lot of services that these homeless have lost touch with. For example, we take individuals into the Veterans Administration, Social Security Administration. Many of their physical problems start with small injuries, and what we'll do is perhaps take them into a hospital for feet problems, ankle problems, that type of thing, so that they're helped in that way. But again, longer-term solutions are beyond us at this point.
Okay. And like you said, to reiterate, you're dealing with a population that is going back out into homelessness. And
yes.
Are you seeing these same people return year after year?
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
Probably today, two-thirds of the individuals in the hall last night were repeats from last year.
From last year.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's funny how Orlando talks. It takes, a while for us to break down the barriers that our guests build up over the years. You know, I'll use a common analogy that, we can't fix a problem in 5 minutes that's taken 5 years to accumulate to.
Right.
And when we're only an intermittent shelter, we're only open during the inclement weather, it really, sometimes we have to start back over at square one with people that come in. Right now we're just limited only being able to open up, you know, when it's 40 degrees or colder or greater than 50% chance of rain.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty simply put to us last week that, you know, our basic reason for opening up our warming center is to save lives. And that's our number one thing when it's cold outside, if it's raining. We want to save their life that night so they don't die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's your threshold right there,
yes.
Right?
Yes, but yeah. You know, ultimately I think our goal is to have that 24-hour center to where these people, we can invite them mm-hmm. to a place where they can be during the day. They can be safe. They can get services, you know, on-site services, a place where they can use a computer to work on basic resumes, applications,
mm-hmm.
build up confidence to re-enter society and give back.
Yeah, yeah.
There's also the matter of hygiene. Today, we don't provide showers, is probably the most significant example. We do provide clothing that's donated, but again, you're talking about individuals that, in appearance, look very, very difficult, and I think we all have experienced looking at a homeless person who's been out there without the hygiene that we all normally have daily.
Right.
And that's probably the starting point for them is to change that environment.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally, we will have showers available, shaves, haircuts, but typically those services are not available to them. And the results of that is, again, of great difficulty in reentering the mainstream.
Right, right. And if you're looking at a more permanent solution, you're looking at bringing that into...
It's got to be a part of the solution, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Day-to-day hygiene, just physical appearance.
Yeah.
I can just think of a number of men, for example, that with a haircut and a shave, they're going to look outstanding.
Yes.
You see them tonight, and they do not look very good.
Yeah. No, I can only imagine. We're going to take a call from Bill. Bill, are you there?
Yes.
Hi. Did you have a comment or a question?
Yeah, my question is, have you ever thought of expanding your program to try to integrate some of the homeless people into the community?
That has to be a part of it. Again, that's part of that longer-term solution.
Okay, well, what I've got in mind is expanding on the idea of tiny houses that San Luis has approved, but include travel trailers and motorhomes in people's backyards and driveways, and getting people, you know, to be neighbors with the community, and they've got skills, some of them. And speaking for myself, I'm in my 70s. I could use a hand around my place sometimes, and you know, and that's how you get to be friends with people. Do something mutually beneficial for each other.
Couldn't agree with you more. In our medically fragile program, we have small houses that we use for these individuals who literally can't care for themselves. But to do that for the mainstream, the limitation that we have every time you turn into an idea like yours, which is great, is really financial, resource-oriented. That's where, in fact, the problem has to be described. And a commitment made to agree on a solution and then implement it. At this point in time, at least in the North County, we really have not done that.
Well, you know, if people can match up stray dogs with willing owners, they should be able to match up stray people with, you know, willing caretakers or whatever you want to call them, that, you know, there are people out there. They're not.
Well, you sound a lot like these two gentlemen, Bill, that you're looking at these people with an open heart.
You know, you mentioned the idea of the small houses, which I think is a fabulous idea, and I'm hoping that the city of San Luis can move forward with that. But also, you know, you mentioned, you know, trailers in people's driveways. We, as we look at these bigger ideas, you know, we still run up against municipal codes. A lot of cities don't authorize campers parked on the street. You can't you can't stay in your trailer. So as these ideas are great, we still battle against certain laws because people want to maintain the appearance of their front yard, and mm-hmm. I try to be respectful of that. You know, I live in a home, and I don't want my neighbors, or I keep my house up to a point where I don't have people living in a trailer. So those are some of the challenges, and I think it's going
to
take
a lot. Well, people are going to have to get over those ideas of not wanting a trailer in somebody else's in your neighborhood. You know,
Bill,
you've got a problem
here. We agree with you. We've got to change some mindsets.
And it's not going to be with tiny homes, because you can't build one for less than $50,000.
Yeah.
But you can move in a travel trailer easy, you know, and put somebody up for 6 weeks or however long it takes to get them on their feet.
Well, Bill, wherever your homeless shelter is near you, go work with them and help them work to change the attitudes of those around us.
You do have a homeless shelter down in South County, Bill.
Yeah, I believe it's the Five Cities Homeless Coalition.
Yeah, Coalition.
I've got a homeless person living on my property right now. Is that good enough?
That is fabulous.
Well, I'm sure it's good enough for him, Bill.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm doing my part.
Great. Nice. Thank you
Bill.
For calling,
okay,
Bill.
Bye.
And thank you for doing that. This is Central Coast Voices, and I'm your host, Chris Kingdon Barker. KCBX Public Radio, your public radio from Salinas to Ventura, and on the web at kcbx.org. My guests for today's show are Orlando Gallegos and Sergeant Jeff Wilshersen, both from the Transitional Food and Shelter. And today's show is live. You're welcome to participate, like Bill just did from Arroyo Grande, by calling us at 805-781-3875. We'd love to engage you in today's conversation about the homeless situation in North County and what needs to be done and what can be done about it. Love to have some of your ideas. Bill shared some of his. When we're talking about what the community response is in Atascadero in the North County, how has the community kind of come around this issue? And what kind of steps are you guys really looking at to resolve some of this? And what kind of barriers are you encountering?
Well, to start with, let's describe what we do today. We have a large number of community members, primarily from the faith-based part of the community, who donate food, donate their time, they donate clothing, they donate money.
Yeah.
And those are all the limiting factors as well. Ultimately, what we don't have is a facility that we can use on a
continual basis.
Yes, a continuing basis. And consequently, we let our guests leave at 7 a.m. in the morning. They go back into that cold, very selfish, very fearful environment. Mm-hmm. And so all the good that we do, some part of that gets lost as they go right back to that bridge that they live under during the day, mm-hmm. or the streets that they walk, or the restaurants that they try to use their lavatories. It just is in stark contrast. Again, what we need is additional resources. We ask that any one of you that can donate, please do so. Mm-hmm. That money will all be put to use. These are nonprofit organizations. It will not be wasted, but it will certainly help us to achieve that next step, which we have to have, and that is a fully owned facility that can provide all the services so we, in fact, can continue that building process throughout the day. And ultimately have these employment training, access to computers so that they can access employment and get them a job.
Now, in other areas of the county, there are plans that they're working toward or actually have achieved in some areas about facilities. You know, Prado Day Center has been in existence for a long time, but you know, is there anything that actually has begun in that kind of vein?
Well, again, ECHO exists.
Yeah.
And they own their own facility.
Right.
And they're enlarging that presently. However,
It's not
that,
the same population.
That is just not adequate to the need. Again, 80% of the population, of the homeless population, does, on a practical basis, does not qualify for the ECHO assistance.
There, you know, what about the people that say there are some individuals that will never want to live in a shelter, will never want to live in a roofed facility for any length of time, maybe when it's really cold out?
Well, I'm sure that they're out there, but I can't think of many that I've
met. You haven't
met.
Run into a lot of them.
No, not at all. Actually, what they wish they had was a place to read a newspaper, a place to sit, a place to talk. Again, the hygiene issue of showers, shaves, haircuts for everyone, both men and women. All of those are things that they'd like to have. Instead, they have to pack up every morning between 6 and 7 after they finish their breakfast. They are out the door and back into the streets again. So, again, I have not met many of them that just relish going out there. They don't.
For the program that has the mobile showers, is that something that engages with you at all?
Do well,
they
that's
come
something
up to
that
North
we'll
County?
Be wanting to integrate this year.
Yeah.
Again, that becomes somewhat facility and geography oriented.
Yeah.
In terms of being able to do that, and
I know that I had a conversation with the organization that has the mobile showers, which is here in San Luis.
Right.
The problem with that is that trailer is so heavy. It's very difficult to get over the grade.
Really?
So,
goodness. Okay. Well, I thought the grade anybody could get over, but I guess
apparently that shower trailer is really heavy, and it takes a really big truck to get it moving.
To pull that. Maybe that's something that somebody could volunteer to do. Yes.
If anyone has a huge truck that can help us, we can coordinate with them. That'd be fabulous.
Yeah, that'd be something to look at. I'm curious, Jeff, with you having been on the street and having seen the homeless population from the perspective of law enforcement, were you always inclined to see this with the kind of heartfelt perspective that you seem to come from now? Or was there a little bit of a different twist towards it earlier in your life?
I would love to sit here and say that I've always been this way, but
you cannot lie.
I cannot lie. I enforce the law very strictly. We had the city has a camping ordinance and other municipal codes that I did my part and tried to help solve homelessness through enforcement, and quickly learned that that wasn't working. It was simply...
When you say it wasn't working, what do you mean?
It was punishing someone for being homeless,
right.
Giving them a citation or arresting them for different violations of the laws that they were doing. In some instances, it helped. It really motivated something. Hey, I don't want to be a criminal. I'm not going to be on the street. So I do believe that an enforcement arm in solving certain homelessness is effective.
Certain behaviors,
correcting certain behaviors, absolutely. But it was more just, I described as displacing a problem that exists. We'd find a homeless encampment that was unsanitary or whatever you want to call it, and we'd come in, we'd eradicate it, issue citations if needed, and we were simply moving them from one spot of town to another. It wasn't solving the problem. So I started trying to get creative and getting involved in different organizations. One of the programs I started was called Homeward Bound, which I've modeled after the city of San Francisco has something similar. And it's giving bus tickets or train tickets to homeless people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a bigger form of displacement. I'm not simply putting...
You're not sending them to another city?
I'm not sending them on a bus.
They're not all going to Fresno?
You're going to be Fresno's problem. No. I actually do a lot of follow-through on it. I make sure that the person doesn't have any pending court cases. They're not on probation or parole.
Right.
But they also have to have someone on the other end to pick them up from the bus or train.
Mm-hmm.
So I make telephone contact with wherever they want to go to make sure that someone's on that receiving end that is going to provide them services and a place to stay and help get them back into employment. And right now I'm doing about one a month, and I have some fabulous success stories. I get phone calls, I make a lot, all of them make contact with me. When you get to your destinations, please call me and let me know you made it safely. And they do. But I'll get a phone call a month later saying, thank you so much. It changed my life. About 2 months ago, a young lady was just not doing good here in town. She was getting ready to get in trouble with the law and needed to get off the street. So she had a relative. No, I'm sorry. It was an ex-boyfriend who she started rekindling relationship with in New York. So I arranged, a variety of trains and buses to get her back to New York. And I got a phone call a few weeks ago, said she's doing fabulous. They're living together and their relationship's going well and she's looking for employment. So it's things like that that I know, just success stories that I'm making a difference. And that's why I got into law enforcement, is to make a positive difference.
Yeah. No, that's a great story. And I think people overlook the idea sometimes that you mentioned it, I think, or one of you did, the fact that people can get stuck in a town, a car breaks down, and they just end up being there.
It's
not uncommon.
They move there to be with,
someone, and they get dumped.
And that doesn't work out. And next thing you know, they're on the street.
Yeah.
And it's very common, and we run into it quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, and in an area like this where it is not cheap to live, or you need to depend on two people to live together in order to afford rent, if you're out, you're out.
Yeah.
We've also seen it that people who are older and or in their 60s, and we see this with women, too, who are in their 60s, and a spouse decides that, gee, that's just not working for me anymore. That's, that's a step into homelessness for
them.
Absolutely,
it is.
And
and we have many of those with us.
Yes, yes. And, there's only so much of, now do I go back to work? What do I do? And
well, I'll give you an example from this past year.
Yeah, I'd love
year.
To hear that.
A woman who's in her mid-50s, unfortunately, she's in a wheelchair. It's motorized and such, but after the center closes, you'll find her sleeping in bushes up and down Highway 41 much of the year. Has nowhere to go. Though she's very friendly, articulate, and so forth, her future's really behind her. And so her expectations are survive, and that's what she does daily.
Let's talk a little bit about the individuals that are really medically compromised that you support through, that's a different way that you're providing housing for them, because
those
are either small houses
or tiny houses,
yes,
as we call them.
Or you're actually doing this sometimes through hotels, or
we have a corporate contract with Motel 6 and we use that as an overflow. Both the one in Atascadero and the one in Paso Robles. It's really a function of circumstance and where we are in terms of the housing that we do have.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about, you have examples of cases of people that you...
Well, they're not all old.
A
young lady, actually, early 30s, with a young son. Unfortunately, he's autistic. Her rent was raised. She just couldn't afford it, so they started living in her car. Well, after I think about a month and a half of that, it just was going nowhere. So she showed up at a local agency who called us, and we came over and took her in. Unfortunately, that car had bed bugs, which spread throughout a couple of units, and so we had to refurbish them entirely. But that person now, in a clean, tiny house with her son, is living, and she's employed, and she's doing very well, all in all. But the difference is that she has a house that's provided to her. Now, in addition, all of the clients in this category, medically fragile, make certain that they have food.
Mm-hmm.
We make certain they're taking their medications. We provide them services with a variety of agencies, particularly government agencies and the hospitals, making sure they make their medical appointments and so forth. In essence, they largely totally depend on us.
Yeah. Yeah. I looked at your website, too, and it mentioned even hospice. So if someone's on hospice, in order to receive that care, they have to be able to deliver it somewhere. So for the agencies to provide that, you've got to have them in some kind of housing, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the fundamental need that has to be met.
And I don't think people understand that hospitals don't have the resources necessarily to provide for people to spend months and months and months in the hospital.
Well, that's why we have an excellent relationship, particularly in North County,
with
where we
have Twin Cities. Right.
We have an excellent working relationship. In fact, a Twin Cities employee is also a member of our board of directors. It's a very tight relationship. We take referrals from them frequently throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
And again, our job is to take them after they've been released from the hospital and give them that additional support that hopefully will lead them to a personal life that they themselves can support.
Yeah. I mean, they can't, the hospitals are prevented from just discharging someone to the street if they're
critically ill. Yes.
Yeah, they can't do that. So I would assume that they appreciate that partnership from you.
Absolutely, and we do too as well.
They love us up there at Twin. At the end of our last season with the Warming Center, I actually got a letter from them that said that their admissions to the emergency room during the times our Warming Center was open was down significantly.
Really?
And they attributed it to our Warming Center being open. It gave these people a warm place to stay at night, and it didn't expose them to the elements outside, mm-hmm. which essentially – you know, it saved their lives. It saved money. It just did such great things that they were extremely thankful for us.
Yeah. It's interesting. Years ago, and I'm talking years ago, I'm going to really date myself now. In the 70s, I worked in Santa Clara County, and the county of Santa Clara closed the drunk tank. And during that time, they provisionally tried an experiment where what they would do is in downtown San Jose, they would do sweeps all the time with paddy wagons. And they would sweep up. And at that time, we weren't calling people homeless, but they would sweep up individuals that were homeless who were bothering people in the parks, in the mm-hmm. businesses, and would bring them in. And we would see the same people. I would see the same individuals night after night or month after month, year after year. And they would do treatment instead. We would kind of evaluate them and would be able to provide, because the county has so many resources, provisions to go to drugs rehab or psychiatric rehab or social model programs or warming shelters or, you know, and it was a very different model than just throwing them into jail. But you have to have the resources to do that.
And the resources are the key.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So let's hear from Michelle.
Hi.
Hi.
I just and thank you for this conversation. I'm a volunteer at ECHO, and I just want to put out there that ECHO does offer showers for the creek people, the people that are on the street. Oh, I'm just getting a text message. People on the street from 4 to 5:30 every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Anybody can come in and take a shower. And also provide hot meal every single night, 365 days a year, to anybody that shows up. So I appreciate what you guys are doing, but ECHO is also doing a great job, and I know that you believe that, but also they do provide the showers. So that is an opportunity.
Thank
for the
you,
people
Michelle.
That are down and out.
Thank you for
okay?
pointing that out. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Colin.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And let's see. Is it Lindy?
Lindy, yes.
Hi.
In Los Osos.
Hi, Lindy.
Hi. I'm really enjoying the conversation. I think a lot of really important issues are being discussed. And the one I wanted to kind of focus on is the long-term homelessness, and that if people cannot get into housing or jobs, they end up being going from shelter to shelter, bush to bush, creek to creek. What I really feel is that we need to establish some homeless cities and or towns or communities, but they need, even if we use the little sheds that they sell at Home Depot and get those retrofitted, but with a central area for bathing, for a good dining hall, for a social area, and for storage. People have stuff that they drag with them. But I really, I feel like that's sort of the last thing, and it is about the money, isn't it?
Hmm.
Yet at the same time, what is it costing us to try to take care of these people individually? And if we were to set up something like a homeless city, you could have three different levels: the newly homeless, the chronically homeless that choose to be there, and thirdly would be the drug, alcohol, and mentally ill.
Hmm.
And you could have counseling for each of those groups of people just to help them get through so that they actually have a place to stabilize and begin to build their life again. They're not going to do it at the rate of being out on the streets again every morning. So anyway, I really urge that we kind of go for a stronger model. And I think every community needs to work together. I work with people in Los Osos. I do the food distribution going on 9 or 10 years now. And I know many of the homeless here. We are purchasing, our People Helping People group is purchasing a shower facility. I think $25,000. We've been raising the money, and we will soon have that available for 2 days a week for showering and haircuts. And each community, I think, is going to have to really face some of those issues. I know there's grant funding coming from the state for homelessness, and I hope that we can put it to good use.
Thank you. Thank you, Lindy, for calling in.
Thank you.
And thank you for your work in Los Osos.
Okay. Bye.
You know, and I think what Lindy points out is that this is so wide. This is not just an issue in a local community.
I think every city in our county or city in our state is experiencing some sort of homelessness.
Right.
It is a nationwide problem.
Yeah, it is, and it's not getting any smaller either.
There are some models that, especially in New Jersey, Texas, Austin, Texas, that I think if one looks at, one sees some of these ideas being put to work. And again, I think it's that alliance of our faith-based community, all of our citizens, our city councils, our city governments, our county governments, all working together.
Yeah.
And we just need to move faster and demand of ourselves greater resources be applied to solve the problem.
And it's going to take a lot of thinking outside the box to solve this problem. You know, they bring up these ideas. You know, she mentioned, you know, a homeless town or the tiny houses, which I think are fabulous ideas. But we also have to remind ourselves that these people were re-entering them into society, and they need to be in counseling, and they need to learn how to to be a successful person. And, you know, you look down in San Diego, who just had a huge problem the past year with outbreak with some communicable diseases in these encampments. And that's my fear. You know, you establish a, you know, homeless city, you know, you're kind of doing the same thing.
There has to be the health factor.
Yeah, you know, we need to hold these people accountable to get better and give them the love and support to get there.
Right. Right.
I think there's another element that we never talk about, and that is the health of our cities themselves and the community as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
If we take, for example, Atascadero, if there are 100 or 200 homeless in the downtown area, it is debilitating to our business, to our enjoyment of our parks, the enjoyment of our restaurants.
Yeah.
All of those are key factors that we need to recognize. And, of course, that affects our entire community.
Yeah, it's how to balance all of that, because you can look at it from the perspective of the individuals that are trying to run businesses and all of those things, too.
And we're so sympathetic to them.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they'll benefit directly by solving the homeless problem.
Of course, of course, yeah. I'm going to take a quick, John, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I have just a minute, but...
Yeah, I read a couple of years ago about a program down, I think it was down in L.A. or something, where they took homeless people, they screened them pretty well, and then they matched them up with elder people who, you know, were living alone and, you know, needed help around their house or whatever. And that seems the way, interesting way to go. I mean, you don't have to build warming centers. You don't have to raise money. You don't have to do any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Would you care to comment on that? And have you heard of that program working elsewhere in the country?
I personally haven't heard of that. I mean, obviously, to get a program up and like that takes a lot of planning and other resources. We'd have to coordinate with agencies like Adult Protective Services, I think, is a type of elderly person he's referring to match them up.
Right.
It's kind of like a in-home health care somebody there, which, it's these conversations that really spark ideas for us to really start thinking outside the box to solve this problem.
But I love all of the different ideas, and those are the kinds of things that have to be generated. And there isn't just one solution, but it's looking at different solutions for different areas and trying them. But you're always going to get pushback, so it's also continuing to push forward on them. But thank you for the suggestion, John. Good to think about.
I think it's those pushbacks that we need to reevaluate.
Yeah.
And see where we need to make changes again. The problem is large. It's growing, and it's not going away.
It's not going to go away.
We have
is
to solve it?
I mean, just because we don't like it. And we don't like the way it looks, we can't ignore it. And you as a police officer, what are the chances that you and the rest of the force can just remove the homeless in Atascadero?
Not going to happen.
Okay. So,
I mean, they're, it's a part of our everyday lives. Everyone in our community sees them.
Yeah.
Some stop and help. Others just drive by.
Yeah. And I think if people really want to consider, too, they can look at from their own perspective or maybe from the perspective of a young adult child that they know or a neighbor or friend, you know, how close to homeless they would be if they missed one or two paychecks.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's so many people, I don't want to say so many, but there's people out there that have a negative outlook on homelessness. They classify that, you know, all homelessness is bad, and it's a daily fight for us to educate people that, you know, not all homeless people are not bad. You know, we can't stereotype them into one classification.
Thank you. I want to thank my guests, Orlando Gallegos and Sergeant Jeff Wilshusen, for joining me in today's discussion. Next week, Fred Monroe. You've been listening to Central Coast Voices, and we appreciate all the people that called in. I'm Chris Kington-Barker. Thank you for joining us on Central Coast Voices.